Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another edition, a Halloween edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on October 30th, 2020. But before we do that, guys, I wanted to go ahead and wish everybody a happy and a safe Halloween if you are celebrating. I know Halloween's always been one of my favorite holidays. So if you are celebrating, I hope that you guys all have a great and a safe time. But like I said, we are here for the SmackDown review, so we will get to that in just a second. But before we do that, guys, I wanted to go ahead and say that at the end of today's episode, I actually had a little bit of bonus content, if you want to call it that, for you guys. Just in the spirit of Survivor Series, I wanted to go ahead and give my top five Survivor Series teams of all time. Not going to go too into detail. I'm just going to basically read off my top five whenever that comes, but I'm going to do that after the SmackDown review. So for those of you who are only here for the SmackDown review and that's all you want, we're going to get to that first. But for those of you that want a little bit of bonus content, you could stick around for the end and we will do the top five Survivor Series teams of all time. But like I said, guys, we're here for the SmackDown review, so we will go ahead and get right into that. And they start the show with none other than the Universal Champion Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman coming to the ring. And when they're on their way to the ring, they show the highlights from the Universal Championship match at Hell in a Cell, which was a pretty good match. I was very surprised that it started the show, but it was a very good match. It didn't disappoint. I feel like both guys delivered, and Jimmy Uso, whenever he got in there and got involved, I feel like that's whenever the match really, really got good. So a thumbs up from that perspective. But as far as tonight goes, guys, Jey Uso was in the ring already whenever they were making their way down there. They didn't show his entrance, nothing like that. He was just in there kind of looking disappointed. I mean, a lot more than disappointed. He was just completely bothered. He was beside himself, almost in a panic state, you could tell. He was just definitely not in a good place. And Paul Heyman, once they get in the ring, he attempts to do his normal introduction, but before he can even get a word out, Jey Uso interrupts him, snatches the microphone out of his hand, and gives a pretty passionate promo. I feel like it's a pretty good promo as far as his standards go. I mean, as I've said before, Jey Uso is not known for his mic skills, so what I've seen from him the last couple weeks, I've actually been pretty impressed because they seem real. They seem like he's not just reading something from a script. He's giving you what he's got. And that is something that I can always appreciate when someone's cutting a promo. So I really like that out of Jey Uso these last couple weeks. But tonight, he tells Roman that he didn't beat him and that he used the only person in the world that would make him say, "I quit." Basically just saying that he only did it so he would say it, or he only said, "I quit," to save his brother. And he brings up their childhood and how Roman always tried to one-up him. And Roman basically just responds by saying, "I mean, I told you what I was going to do and I did it. I made you say I quit." He rubs it in by reminding him about their older relatives waiting for Roman at the top of the ramp after their match. And he says that everybody from the oldest chief to the youngest kid in their family, they're all behind Roman. And that if Jey Uso doesn't fall in line by the end of the night, that he's out of the family. Which I thought that the stipulation in the match was that if he said I quit, he was out of the family. But I could have just missed something there, because obviously things get a little bit more explained later in the night. But at this point, Jey Uso just loses it. I mean, he's already crying. He repeatedly tells Roman that he hates him. And Roman just says that he knows, he understands, and that he would probably hate himself too. But he does tell Jey Uso that he loves him. I mean, this was just a tough look for Jey as far as just getting what we saw there without knowing what we know now at the end of SmackDown, how things unfolded. But at the beginning of the show, it was just, I mean, he just took the loss at Hell in a Cell. And now he comes out basically getting humiliated. I mean, this was just, it wasn't necessarily a great look, but this was great work by both of these guys. Roman Reigns is obviously getting more and more comfortable in this heel role. The Paul Heyman effect is showing during all of his promos. It's just great stuff. Jey Uso is doing some pretty good stuff himself. He even has a match later in the night, which we will get to. But after this one, we have a Survivor Series qualifying match, which is with Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler with Robert Roode. This match starts the domino effect of setting up the SmackDown men's team for Survivor Series, which is obviously going to be taking on the Raw team that so far has Keith Lee, Sheamus, and AJ Styles. So I was definitely hoping that Kevin Owens would get the win here just to have more of a solidified person on the team. Not that, I mean, there's anything wrong with Dolph Ziggler, but yeah, I definitely would rather have Kevin Owens there. But this was a decent match. I mean, when you have these two wrestlers going at it, you can expect a pretty good match with not a lot of botches. I did notice here that Kevin Owens, he might have some new gear. I noticed it last week, but I didn't really think anything of it because his match basically immediately followed the KO show. So I thought that that's why he had the pants on instead of his usual basketball shorts. But he had the pants on again today. So I'm guessing that he might be having some new gear, which I'm actually okay with. Because on a side note here about Kevin Owens, obviously he's a great wrestler, but he kind of has that backyard wrestler feel to him. And that might be what he's going for. But, I mean, when you look at his moveset, it's kind of a lot of other wrestlers' moves. Like when you look at the super kick, the swanton, the stunner. I mean, there's a lot of moves there. The pop-up powerbomb is obviously his, but, like, if you're like a kid and jumping on your trampoline in the backyard, what you're going to do is a bunch of wrestlers finishing moves. At least whenever I was a kid and I was wrestling with my friends, the things that we would always do are the finishing moves to each other. And that's kind of what Kevin Owens does. And he just has those basketball shorts with a big baggy shirt, but it actually looks like he's wearing a smaller shirt and the pants. So it is a noticeable change in his look, and I'm all here for it. I don't really think there was anything necessarily wrong with his last one. It's just something that I pointed out. I mean, it definitely could use a little bit of a tweak, but I do want it to stop there as far as tweaking Kevin Owens, because I do think that he has the best theme song in all of WWE, and I am going to stand by that. So if they change his song, I will be very sad. But anyway, back to this match. Bobby Roode gets banned from ringside, or kick from ringside, whatever you want to call it, after he interferes with Owens outside of the ring. And it really doesn't even matter, though, because Owens ultimately uses a stunner to get the win and qualify for the match at Survivor Series, which everybody pretty much seen coming. And after this, we have a backstage segment with Adam Pearce, who's seen talking to Natalya, Billie Kay, and Bianca Belair. And they're all kind of going on and on about why they should be given a spot on the Women's Survivor Series team. And obviously, as you could expect, Adam Pearce sets up a triple threat match where the winner will get a spot on the team, and the match will start right after these next couple segments. But I do like what they did there. They didn't just hit us with a random match, kind of like with what they did the other two, as in the Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler match and the match that's later on in the night, which is Daniel Bryan and Jey Uso, both of those qualifying matches, we really didn't get any explanation as to why those guys got it. And I guess they gave us a little bit of something here. So they say that that match is next, but there is a couple segments here before that that I wanted to get to. And one of them is the Corey Graves interview with Lars Sullivan. And this was actually kind of a beneficial interview if you wanted to get to know Lars Sullivan a little bit, because he really hasn't given us anything for the amount of time that he's been on the main roster, other than just his destruction over any mid-card guy he can get his hand on. We really haven't seen much about Lars, haven't seen any depth whatsoever, but we do get a little bit of that here in this interview, as Corey Graves starts by introducing Lars Sullivan, and he asks if he can call him Lars. And Lars actually responds by saying that it's very considerate of him, and asks if he's sure that he doesn't want to call him the Freak. So right there, you see, ooh, well, Lars is showing resentment towards being called the Freak, which, as everybody's noticed, the announce team has been beating in the ground every single time Lars Sullivan is in the ring. They call him the Freak dozens of times, or however many, but it's definitely a lot. So obviously now we know that they've been doing that for a reason. But he tells stories about being bullied as a child. He says that he was called Freak Show, so that's why he hates being called the Freak. But he tells a story about the students and the teachers all laughing at him, and he ultimately did something about it and was no longer allowed at school. They don't really say what he did. I mean, it's Lars Sullivan, so you could use your imagination. But Corey asks him what he wants to accomplish in the WWE, and he answers by saying, a lifetime of pain and humiliation to anybody who gets in his way, and to make this entire world his personal playground and his personal hell on earth. So like I said, this is probably the most we've gotten from Lars Sullivan. He addressed being called the Freak. He gives a backstory on why he hates it. So I don't really know where they're going to go from there. But one thing I've noticed that WWE has a bad habit of doing with these type of guys, and Braun Strowman is a good example of it, is they focus so much on the destruction and building them as being a monster that they don't really put any thought or any investment into actually building up the character. So with Lars Sullivan, for the longest time, I mean, we didn't know anything about him. It's sad whenever you know more about his personal life than you do about his actual character. But we did get a little bit of information, which wasn't much, but it's still a little bit of something to say, all right, well, this guy obviously had a rough childhood. He's not just some psychopath who wants to come out here and kill everybody. So that's definitely something to pay attention to, because it's obvious that they might be going a different direction with Lars as far as exposing him and telling us a little bit more about him. But the other segment before that triple threat qualifying match is a backstage segment with Buddy Murphy and Aaliyah. And this one starts by Buddy and Aaliyah backstage. They're kind of just there talking. She tells him that she's told her mom about everything and that she's being open-minded. Her dad and her brother, however, they won't even speak to her about Murphy. And Buddy says that he understands why they feel the way they do, and that he's going to make a public apology tonight on SmackDown. And we'll get to a little bit more of the Buddy Murphy and Aaliyah stuff, which I'm sure you guys are really excited to hear more about that. But we will get to more of that here in just a second. But before we do that, we will get to this triple threat qualifying match for the SmackDown Women's Survivor Series team between Natalya, Bianca Belair, and Billie Kay. This was another strong showing from Bianca. She's now 2-0 on SmackDown. This time it was in a triple threat match, and she once again looked like she was on a completely different level than her competition. Billie Kay obviously just settling into her singles competitor role, so I expect a little bit of a transition there. I honestly don't remember the last time she was a single star, probably whenever she was in NXT, but that's definitely going to take some getting used to. She had a different song coming out, So her and Natalya both take a loss here. And Natalya kind of, I mean, she's just along for the ride. But the SmackDown Women's Division is going to be in good hands with Bianca Belair. And just quickly here, I'm going to go ahead and give a way early prediction. But I think that Bianca Belair is going to win the Women's Royal Rumble this year. And that might not be breaking news to anybody, because as you can see, she's very, very, very hot right now. They're pushing her. They're making her look really good. I can only imagine what she's going to do at Survivor Series. But if you're asking me right now, I'm putting my money on Bianca Belair to win the Women's Royal Rumble. So I will go on record right now in October and say that. But that match really wasn't very long. I mean, it was pretty quick. She dominated him for the most part. And she got the win. So Bianca Belair is the first woman to join the SmackDown Survivor Series team. And next, we get that public apology from Buddy. He comes to the ring with Aaliyah. And there's actually a lot to unfold here. Buddy starts his apology by saying that he understands why the Mysterios despise him. And as a man, he needs to apologize to him face to face. He literally begs them to come to the ring. But the person who comes to the ring is not a Mysterio. It is none other than Seth Rollins. And I'm sure that this rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, just strictly because Seth Rollins is the one that was, I mean, when Buddy and Aaliyah were coming to the ring, it had nothing to do with Seth Rollins. They were coming down there to address the Mysterios. So Seth Rollins, in the sense of obviously storyline purposes, he's the one keeping himself involved in this. So I've been upset that he has been, what I've been calling it, tangled up in all this Mysterio stuff. It's kind of hard to put the blame on anybody whenever he's the one who's coming to the ring and interrupting him. And I know that that's what he's being told to do, but still, I want to see Seth Rollins in a meaningful feud and out of this stuff as soon as possible. But anyway, Seth begins talking to Buddy Murphy as he's coming down the ramp. And he's telling him that Rey and Dominic are never going to forgive him. They're never going to accept him and Aaliyah's relationship. But he, as in Seth Rollins, will accept them. But before he could even finish doing his pitch to them, because he said a lot more when he got in the ring. He did all that talking when he was walking down the ramp. When he got to the ring, he tried to do a little bit more. But before long, he was sneak attacked by Dominic. And Dominic and Seth are kind of going around on the ground, punching each other. Buddy actually pulls Dominic off and starts to do the dirty work himself and starts punching Seth. But Dominic doesn't care that Buddy was trying to help him. He picks him up and he shoves him. That leads to a brawl between them. But Dominic is getting his ass kicked, so Rey comes out to the ring, which leads to a Buddy Murphy and Rey scuffle. And as Buddy Murphy gets set up for the 619 and Rey's about to hit it, Aaliyah gets in the way and tells him to stop. That's enough. She's begging him. And as Dominic and Rey are trying to tell her to get out of the way, she finally admits that she loves him. And this is kind of where it just becomes official. Everybody knows this is what they're doing now. But I was actually even mind blown that they were going with this. And it gets worse. They beg her. They awkwardly beg her for probably like 3 minutes to leave with them, to go back, to stop, and she does not want to. She says that she loves Murphy, obviously. They finally give up. They leave the ring, and as they're looking back in the ring, she grabs Buddy Murphy's face, and she kisses him, which is really awkward. I didn't want that to happen, but it obviously did, and it just feels like I'm covering an episode of Days of Our Lives here. I mean, really, this could not end fast enough. But I try to look at it from an objective perspective and not really focus too much on how I feel about it personally. So, I mean, it is what it is. I don't think this is going to be ending anytime soon. So, we might as well just get used to it, guys. But after this, we get a tag team match with Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura versus the Street Profits. And I was actually kind of waiting for this. I wanted to see what the Street Profits had to say to address the New Day's impression of them, which I thought was pretty good on Monday Night Raw. And it was pretty underwhelming. For those of you that are keeping score already, you can mark 1 point down for the New Day because they absolutely own the Street Profits on Raw, and the Street Profits really didn't have anything to say. I mean, they cut a promo talking about taking the torch from them or whatever. And then they have a match with, obviously, Shinsuke and Cesaro and get the win. But, I mean, I actually, which is kind of weird to say, but I was actually more impressed with Shinsuke and Cesaro leaving this match. And I've said before that I am a fan of that tag team. But they actually, and there is a difference, they actually show good tag team wrestling. Like, there's wrestlers that are single superstars and they just get put together and they tag each other in and they do their stuff. And then there's tag team wrestlers who actually focus on tag team wrestling. I know they're not in the WWE anymore, but the Revival was really good at that. And you just see Shinsuke and Cesaro do that multiple times in this match. And it kind of sucks to say because the tagline, the famous tagline for this pay-per-view is Survivor Series, the best. Is it the best of the best or the best versus the best? It's one of those two. But anyway, I do not feel like the Street Profits are the best tag team on SmackDown. I feel like that is Shinsuke and Cesaro, so it's not really the best versus the best at Survivor Series. But I understand it's champion versus champion. So I am just hoping that maybe after Survivor Series we can get Shinsuke and Cesaro in an actual feud with the Street Profits and maybe get those tag team belts back. But moving on here, after the tag team match, we get Sami Zayn backstage again, cutting another good promo. He addresses his match at Survivor Series with Bobby Lashley, who's the United States champion. And Sami just starts listing off over a dozen countries that he's wrestled and established a fan base in, and calls himself the champion of the people. Not the people's champion, the champion of the people. And I mean, this is just really good stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing. I mean, I know that Bobby Lashley isn't going to really say anything meaningful on Monday night, but MVP might. So I'm definitely expecting a response from the Hurt Business. And if we're going to get MVP and Sami Zayn going back and forth on the mic leading up to Survivor Series, then that is something that I can definitely get some interest in. But I am definitely looking forward to this feud being over. Or not a feud, I mean, it's not even a feud. I'm looking forward to this pay-per-view being over just strictly for Sami Zayn to possibly get an actual meaningful feud with him as the heel champion. I feel like we might be able to get a good version of Sami Zayn there. There's not a whole lot of baby faces on SmackDown to challenge him, but they seem to always figure that kind of stuff out, so I'm not really worried about that. I'm just looking forward to seeing Sami in a meaningful feud, hopefully with somebody like Daniel Bryan. But after Sami Zayn cuts his promo backstage, we get Sasha Banks in the ring, who comes to the ring with the steel chair that Bayley brought to the ring for several weeks. She goes on and on. She says that she thought that it was their friendship that was unstoppable, but it was really actually just her. And she says that she told her that she was going to take her championship, and she did it. And Bayley comes out, interrupts her, and immediately before Bayley comes out, Sasha tries to transition to her match at Survivor Series against Asuka, but she's interrupted by Bayley, who immediately takes a shot at her and references her not being able to defend her championship successfully, which is, I mean, one of the worst kept secrets in WWE is that Sasha has never successfully defended her women's championship match. But I think that all those jokes probably end tonight because, as we know, or as you should know by now, Sasha and Bayley have a title match next week on SmackDown for the SmackDown Women's Championship, which will be their third, I believe, their third women's championship match in probably about a five-week span. And two of them are coming on SmackDown. Only the one was in Hell in a Cell. So I do expect Sasha to finally get her first title defense here on SmackDown next week. If she doesn't, I think that is going to be, I mean, a nightmare for her. If she loses again without having a successful title defense, I mean, I just really don't know what to tell her at that point. Next up here, we have the main event, which was the final qualifying match for the Survivor Series team with Daniel Bryan versus Jey Uso. And this match only lasted about 5 minutes of being a regular match before Roman Reigns came out to ringside, and he begins watching very closely. And side note, Paul Heyman was actually staring at Roman Reigns like this whole time. It was actually kind of weird. I'm not sure if any of you noticed it too. If not, you should go back and look. But every time the camera cut to Roman, Paul was just staring at him, and it was just getting to the point where it was uncomfortable for me anyways, because, I mean, it would just bother me if somebody was standing 5 inches from my face and was just staring at me. But anyways, this was, like I said, a good match from both people. Jey Uso picks up the clean win over Daniel Bryan, which kind of caught me off guard. I was really hoping that Daniel Bryan would win here, just from a team perspective. Starting off with Kevin Owens as the first member, I felt like Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan would be a solid first two members of the SmackDown team. So that's what I wanted, but that's not what we got here. Jey Uso got the win. And after the match, things got kind of weird with Roman Reigns, because he gets in the ring and Jey Uso just repeatedly tells him, "I'm with you." He says it probably like 4 or 5 times, and you kind of notice Roman just stare at Daniel Bryan. And after a while, you kind of knew what that meant, that Roman was kind of signaling that he wanted Jey to attack him, and Jey does just that. And the whole time he's doing it, he's screaming, "I understand. I understand." He says that so many times as he's beating him. They make their way outside of the ring, and he eventually puts him through the announce table, which you would think that that's probably going to be the end of it. On a normal SmackDown, that's probably whenever they go off the air, but that's not what happens here. Even after he goes through the table, Jey continues to just pound him. And, I mean, he could still be pounding him right now, because they went off the air and that's what he was doing. But you see Roman Reigns walk away, and he just has that evil smirk on his face. Just a look of satisfaction where you can tell that he was the one that basically orchestrated that and that he was responsible for that. But this left me wondering, what does this mean for Jey Uso? I mean, obviously this had all the makings of a heel turn. But does this mean that he is going to align himself with Roman Reigns and maybe start that heel faction, which has been really, a lot of people have been suspecting that, if that's going to happen with Roman Reigns. I know they've been talking about possibly a Samoan faction, and Jey Uso could just be that first domino to fall. Obviously, you have to assume what this means for Jimmy when he gets healthy. If he gets involved, if this leads to a Uso versus Uso match, and then eventually he might join too. And this also had me wondering, whenever Roman Reigns was walking away like that, I wonder how loud the boos would be for Roman if there were fans in the crowd right now. Just strictly because there are those fans that no matter what, they have a sour taste in their mouth about Roman Reigns, and they're going to boo him no matter what. They just don't like him. He's not their cup of tea, and that's perfectly fine. But I also want to know the fans who are going to boo him just because he's a heel. The people who are actually still invested, they don't like the bad guy, and they don't like Roman. I'm sure there's people out there who are legitimately hurt that Roman Reigns is a heel right now. So I just actually wonder what his reaction would be if the fans were there. I think he would probably have more cheers than what he had whenever the last time he was on TV with fans. But you really never know when it comes to Roman. He is such a polarizing guy that it would not surprise me if all the fans were still booing him, because that's what I'm used to from all these years. But anyways, guys, that is the SmackDown review. It was a pretty good episode. a lot of stuff to look forward to going forward as far as what's going to happen with Jey Uso. I'm really looking forward to that. Obviously getting more stuff from Sami Zayn. Getting the teams filled up completely. I want to know who's going to be on that team with Bianca Belair and now Kevin Owens and Jey Uso. So there's three more guys that are going to be on that men's team. But like I promised, guys, there is a top five Survivor Series team of all time coming up right now. Alright guys, it is top 5 time, and today we are going to do the top 5 Survivor Series teams of all time. And keep in mind, this is a completely subjective list. It's my 5, so I'm assuming that everybody's going to have their own opinion. And basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my top 5, but I went and found an article by Mike Chiari, who kind of just gives a little bit of detail about each one of these teams. So I'm going to go over my top five, and then I will read off what he has to say about each one of these teams. So at number 5, I have Edge, Christian, and the Hardy Boys from 1999. And what Mike had to say here is, the teams of Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys spent most of their time in WWE feuding with each other. But for one night in 1999, they combined to form one of the most exciting Survivor Series lineups of all time. Edge and Christian, the Hardy Boys, and the Dudley Boys squared off in the original TLC match the following year, so there wasn't as much bad blood at this point. Conventional wisdom would seem to indicate that Edge, Christian, and the Hardys won this match easily. But it was actually the team of Hardcore Holly, Crash Holly, and Too Cool that came out on top. While Edge, Christian, Jeff Hardy, and Matt Hardy are all viewed as top stars in the business in retrospect, they were still just tag team competitors at this point who were trying to make a name for themselves. Hardcore Holly dominated the match as he eliminated both Edge and Christian, en route to being the sole survivor, but that doesn't change how great the losing team was. Many consider Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys to be among the greatest tag teams during the Attitude Era and among the best tag teams in professional wrestling history. There weren't too many times that we were afforded the opportunity to see them working together, but they did precisely that at Survivor Series 1999. The result was somewhat unexpected. However, fans are likely to always remember the brief alliance forged between the two elite tag teams. And at number 4, I have Andre the Giant, Rick Rude, Dino Bravo, Mr. Perfect, and Harley Race of 1988. And it says here, Bobby the Brain Heenan usually didn't get his way when trying to beat some of the biggest stars in WWE, but he managed some of the all-time greats in his own right. In 1988, his team of top heels reigned supreme at Survivor Series as the squad of Andre the Giant, Ravishing Rick Rude, Dino Bravo, Mr. Perfect, and Harley Race was victorious. Aside from Bravo, all the participants on the team were also part of the Heenan family. The faces were usually able to overcome Heenan's stable of superstars, but that wasn't the case in this specific match. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Jake the Snake Roberts, Scott Casey, Ken Patera, and Tino Santana simply didn't have enough firepower to beat Heenan this time. From a talent standpoint, the Heenan side had an obvious advantage, and it showed. The match got to the point where Roberts had to contend with Rude, Andre, Mr. Perfect, and Bravo by himself. The Snake did stage a comeback as he eliminated Rude with a DDT, and Andre got himself disqualified, but Perfect ultimately took advantage of Andre wearing Roberts down as he pinned him. There is no denying that this team is one of the most star-studded ones ever. Andre was a legend in the business. Rude and Perfect were among the greatest intercontinental champions of all time. Race was a multi-time world champion in other promotions, and Bravo was an underrated strong man in his own right. Heenan undoubtedly built the best. And at number 3 here, I have Eddie Guerrero, Big Show, RVD, and John Cena from 2004. Team Guerrero is a Survivor Series faction that most fans remember because it brought top stars at various points in their respective careers together. Eddie Guerrero captained the team alongside Big Show, Rob Van Dam, and John Cena. Guerrero, Big Show, and RVD were already well established, but Cena was still on the ascend at this point, and his participation in this match helped him take that next step. looking at the foursome that Team Guerrero contested only serves to make Latino Heat's troop look even better. Team Angle featured one bona fide star in Kurt Angle, but he wasn't backed up well by the likes of Carlito, Luther Reigns, and Mark Jindrak. All of those guys had talent, but none of them amounted to be much of anything in WWE. Team Guerrero was dominant in this match, with Guerrero, Big Show, and Cena all lasting until the bitter end. Angle received plenty of punishment in this match as the last man remaining on his team, as he took an FU from Cena and a frog splash from Guerrero before Big Show covered him. It was an impressive effort that matched the squad's overall talent. While it was Triple H versus Team Orton that headlined this particular Survivor Series, coming in at number two here for me is the 2006 team of Triple H, Shawn Michaels, the Hardy Boys, and CM Punk. The 2006 edition of the pay-per-view had a renewed focus on the traditional elimination match with three of them on the card, but most fans probably remember the incredible talent that resided on Team DX. It was naturally anchored by Shawn Michaels and Triple H, but it also included the Hardy Boys as well as CM Punk. Michaels and Triple H were already considered legends. Jeff and Matt Hardy formed one of the top tag teams ever, and Punk was one of the faces of WWE. Team DX simply had the perfect mix of past, present, and future stars. Team DX took on Team Rated RKO, which had some strong members in its own right, such as Edge, Randy Orton, and Johnny Nitro, but it also had some throwaway guys in Mike Knox and Gregory Helms. Team DX will always be remembered for the guys on the team, but it was also one of the only teams in Survivor Series history to win without having a single member eliminated. Everyone on Team DX reacted well together, and the highlight of the match came when Michaels eliminated Knox. He went to the corner and asked his teammates, "Who was that guy?" Looking back, Team DX might have been the most fun teams in Survivor Series history, and it was one of the best as well. And coming in at number one, probably not a surprise to most of you guys here, it is The Rock, Chris Jericho, The Undertaker, Kane, and The Big Show from 2001. The point of Survivor Series was always for some of the biggest names in the business to join forces when they normally wouldn't, and that is precisely what happened at Survivor Series 2001. At the time, the Invasion storyline was still going on, but it would come to an end based on the events of the main event. That match pitted Team WWF against the Alliance and ultimately led to the dissolution of the Alliance after the WWF came out on top. The Invasion most definitely made for some strange bedfellows, and that was the case in this match. The Rock, Chris Jericho, The Undertaker, Kane, and Big Show all teamed up to stop the Alliance from taking over the company. All of the men on Team WWF had disagreements in the past, and many of them would feud in the future as well, but they were among the biggest stars in wrestling, and it was awesome to see them all come together. While the Alliance didn't have quite the same star power, it did feature Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, RVD, Booker T, and Shane McMahon. It made for an incredible match with high stakes and ultimately ended with The Rock pinning Austin thanks to Angle's defection from the Alliance to Team WWF. Well, guys, there you go. And that is my top five. I hope that you enjoyed it. I'm probably going to do some more of these top fives in the future. Let me know what you thought. If you disagreed, what your top five would be, just definitely get at me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and let me know what you guys thought. But I definitely appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. Cannot thank you enough. I hope you guys all have a great weekend, a great Halloween. Be safe. And until next time, guys, I will talk to you next week.